Welcome to the Development Podcast. I'm Raka Banerjee with Paul Blake.
Today, we wanted to mark International Women's Day by examining the laws that restrict women's economic opportunities.
That's right. Every year, the World Bank Group publishes data on women, business, and the law. This year, just 8 countries received a perfect score in the most recent rankings. We're also going to be looking at how these laws have evolved over the last 50 years and the toughest challenges that remain.
It's all coming up here on this edition of the Development Podcast from the World Bank Group. But first, Raka, take us through the data. Let's carry on. Run me through, what do we need to know about women, business, and the law 2020?
Yeah, I was just digging into the data behind Women, Business, and the Law, and they're actually looking at the laws and regulations that are on the books in 190 countries. And with the release of Women, Business, and the Law 2020, we're specifically looking at reforms promoting women's economic inclusion that have been made between June 2017 and September 2019.
All right, so slow down. Run me through. What exactly are these laws where we're looking at?
So the index looks at issues relating to mobility, workplace, pay, marriage, parenthood, entrepreneurship, assets, and pension.
Okay, so I was on the Women, Business, and the Law website looking up a couple different countries, and this index goes to 100. So the score is to 100, but you're saying there's only 35 yes or no questions. How? Explain the math behind that.
So that's getting into the weeds a little bit, but basically the team calculates an average for each indicator and then scales that to 100. And then the final score is the scaled averages across all 8 indicators. And this time around, there were actually 8 countries that got a perfect score: Belgium, Canada, Denmark, France, Iceland, Latvia, Luxembourg, and Sweden.
And so a perfect score, that's 100. That means, at least in the eyes of the law, men and women are equal when it comes to economic inclusion. Am I sort of getting that right?
That's exactly right. And just to be clear, it's just what's on the books, but that does make a difference. And say you have a score of 50, that means that women are only basically being given half as many legal rights as men in that country.
Okay, so there's these 8 different indicators. Take me through a couple different examples of the types of questions for each indicator. So presumably, like, those 8 indicators are like basically categories, and then there's kind of questions underneath each of those, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So the team has come up with 4 or 5 questions for each topic that kind of covers that issue. So for example, it's looking at parenthood. The team.
That's one of the 8 indicators.
That's one of the 8, right. Mm-hmm. And the way that it's done is, for each topic, the team is sending questionnaires to something like 2,000 experts on family, labor, and criminal law. And they each get these questionnaires that ask them, in terms of parenthood: 1, whether 14 weeks of paid leave is available to mothers. 2, whether the government administers 100% of maternity leave benefits. 3, do fathers get paid leave? 4, is there any paid parental leave at all? And 5, if it's illegal to fire pregnant workers.
What did the researchers find this time around?
So parenthood is actually, of all the topics, it's the one that gets the lowest score. The global average is just a little bit over 50. So that means that basically women only have half as many rights when it comes to parenthood in those areas, those four or five questions that I just mentioned, relative to men. So in some cases, like 20 countries were a no on all 5 of those questions. So like, it's legal to fire pregnant workers, for example.
20 countries around the world, like, basically zeroed out on the parenthood indicator.
That's right. Exactly.
Wow.
So the good news is, you know, for pay, for parenthood, for actually all 8 indicators, scores have been improving over time. So the average index score across all 8 indicators is around 75.
Meaning roughly that, globally speaking, women have 3/4 of the equality or of the rights of men.
Exactly. In terms of what's on the books.
In terms of what's on the books, of course. So I want to ask a question that, you know, might be on the minds of a lot of folks that are listening to this right now. If we're just looking at the laws, aren't we missing the side of how those laws are like implemented or enforced? In other words, like the everyday lives of women around the world?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. See, so when you work with data, you know, you're always kind of compromising between what you can easily measure and what you actually want to know. The index looks at 190 countries. And so when you have something like this, you really have to ensure clarity and consistency. So the questions are simple, and they're something that we can easily collect across all those countries. So it's obvious that issues of culture, you know, implicit bias, local customs, you know, religion, all of these things are going to play a huge role, but they're exponentially harder to measure, and especially when we're comparing across countries.
All right. Thank you so much. I think I understand what I need to know now. And let's carry on to the big interview. Well, let's dig into the Women, Business, and the Law report further now. Joining me here in the studio is Taya Trumbich. She's the program manager for the project. Taya, thank you so much for being here. I want to start by asking, just how are laws linked to the actual economic inclusion of women around the world?
Well, laws have a direct impact on inclusion. For example, we're looking here at gender equality and how laws differentiate between men and women. And if women are prohibited from working in certain industries or sectors, that directly influences their inclusion.
One of the starkest statistics I read about this is that, globally speaking, women on average have 3/4 of the legal rights of men when it comes to the indicators that you're measuring mm-hmm. here. Where are the biggest differences between men and women?
When we look at where the laws are lacking the most, it is in the parenthood area and on the ones on pay, so the job restrictions that exist on the types of jobs and hours that women can work. This is really where we're lagging behind the most.
And then in terms of regionally speaking, which regions are you seeing more equity between men and women, and which regions are you seeing more of a starker difference?
So this has been holding on for several years now, but the high-income OECD countries are where we see the most equal laws, and the countries where we see the laws lagging behind the most are in the Middle East and North Africa, in Sub-Saharan Africa, and South Asia. But the good news is that those are the regions where the laws are improving the most as well.
So you're seeing the most improvement in those. And is that because there's a lot of room to improve, or is that because there has been some big change in sort of hearts and minds over the past few years?
It's a little bit of both. I think that there is the most room to improve, so we are seeing that huge jump in the scores, but these countries are also choosing to reform these laws now, and I think that's because of the awareness that's being raised around the importance of gender equality, and also they're realizing that they cannot grow as fast as other countries in their regions or around the world if they're not using half of their population to its full extent.
So a lot of it's an economic motivation that their economies can grow if the other half of their workforce is fully allowed to participate. Are you able to put a number on that? You know, how much more economic growth can be achieved, or how much more prosperity can be achieved if women were as equal as men around the world?
Well, there's lots of different data that's coming out of this. I think we've seen one of the latest statistics was that the cost of gender equality is $160 trillion in global wealth. There's new data coming out on that any day. And our data set really helps to make those cases more strongly.
So 8 countries in the report have this perfect score. Briefly, I don't know if you know them off the top of your head, but run me through a few of them that maybe you can recall easily. And are there any amongst that group that are a surprise for you?
So there are 8 countries that score 100 on the 8 areas that we measure.
100 being perfectly equal men and women.
Yes. And that is Belgium, Canada, Denmark, France, Iceland, Latvia, Luxembourg, and Sweden. And Canada joined for the first time this year because they had just recently a reform that introduced a parental leave that is an individual entitlement for both men and women to take leave when they have children. What is surprising to me is that there are only 8 countries. What that means is that
Of 190
countries, that's 96% of the countries in the world have not achieved gender equality. And we're only looking at these 35 questions that we cover in these 8 indicators. So if we looked at a broader set of questions, that number would probably be even lower.
Well, I mean, that's what I was going to ask. When it comes to these 8 countries, is it sort of like jobs done, pack up, head out, sort of full equality has already been achieved, or is there still work to be done?
There's still work to be done. I think these areas that we measure are just the starting step, and they're the ones that we selected because they had the biggest impact on the outcomes we wanted to influence, which is women's labor force participation, the gender wage gap, and these type of issues. But, you know, women have not achieved equality gender equality around the world. Even in Sweden, women are paid less than men. There's less women represented in parliaments, in corporate boards. So this has not been achieved in any country yet.
So it's not just the eight countries we talked about here where there are, you know, full equality. We can also look at countries that have made big improvements. Mm-hmm. We touched on that earlier. Not just the countries themselves, but some of these themes that you've gone through, these eight stages, which sort of indicators, which stages are you seeing the most improvement, and which of the stages are you seeing as being kind of stuck?
So we have the same as with the regions, it's the same with the thematic areas. Where we see the biggest room to improve is where we are seeing countries improving. So the
And that's reason to be happy?
Yeah, that is good news. So we had 40 countries implement 62 different reforms in the last 2 years, and it was concentrated in those regions, Middle East and North Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa. And what they did is they introduced they increased the number of paid maternity leave days. They introduced these provisions prohibiting discrimination in employment. They removed restrictions on women working and the type of jobs and hours that women can work. And so that's the positive news.
Globally speaking, though, those eight stages, is there one that, like, you're just like, I just can't, you know, there isn't much progress on it? Is there one of those stages that just feels like really stuck and difficult to improve, or is everything sort of rising?
Well, there are certain areas where we don't see a lot of reform over the last at least 10 years, and that's related to indicator on assets, which looks at women's ability to manage property and to inherit property. Those are very difficult laws to change, and we are seeing very few countries reforming those.
Explain that to me. So in some countries, women aren't allowed to own a house or own a farm or something like that?
Sometimes it depends on the country. But for example, for this last year, we had Cote d'Ivoire reform its marriage law, and it usually pertains to married women. So often when women marry, they don't have the same rights to the property as their husbands.
And so if they owned some property before, suddenly it becomes the property
yes,
of the husband.
Exactly. And then they're not able to manage it in the same way. Also, when their spouse dies, for example, often the inheritance laws differentiate between the spouses, if it's a male spouse or a female spouse, and with children as well. So sometimes daughters are not able to inherit property in the same way as sons.
So throughout the report, you're looking at the laws on the books. You're looking at the legal inequalities. But isn't that a lot different than the sort of experience of women in their day-to-day lives?
Well, laws are part of everyone's day-to-day lives. We have laws all around the world. And so what we're looking at is things that influence the type of jobs that women can do, the type of opportunities that they have. And that influences their day-to-day.
Mm-hmm. The Me Too movement has shown that, you know, sexual harassment is still a huge issue in the workplace. And mm-hmm. Even in some countries where there are these strong legal protections against sexual harassment, we talked about that a little bit earlier, can laws in and of themselves change some of these social norms? Do you think they have an influence on people?
Well, laws are a reflection of social norms, and putting these things in the law gives women the right to speak up and to actually go to court and enforce some of these rights that they might have. There's still too many factors. There's still a lot of factors that prevent women from speaking up. But once they have that legal protection, it also serves as a deterrent in the workplace to know that this type of behavior won't be tolerated.
Basically, you know that you can be taken to court for this, or there can be a complaint made about this, that it's not just a norm. It's now been sort of codified, right?
Exactly. And the Me Too movement has helped amplify that message, because women are coming out and speaking, and that helps other women feel confident enough to do that. But we really believe that social change often precedes the law, and sometimes it follows it. And we don't know where that happens, and that might depend by the region but in the country.
One other question I had for you is, you know, different cultures ascribe different roles to men and women, mm-hmm. And to the interactions between genders. How does the Women Business and the Law report take into account these different norms in making its recommendations?
So, you know, there's several criteria that we've looked at in designing this index. One of them was internationally agreed best practices. So these are things like the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women that the UN has put out, ILO conventions. So these are internationally agreed practices that are meant to be good.
Sort of universal norms.
Yes, universal norms. And, you know, I think we don't, there's no discussions on whether murder or theft are culturally acceptable things, and that shouldn't be an acceptable thing, that there is a differentiation separation between men and women. Having equal opportunity in the law just means that women have the option to make the best choices for themselves.
I imagine through your role kind of being quite senior in the research team that looks after this report, you meet with governments to discuss the findings, to discuss the data, to share your insights. How do certain governments react to this? So maybe governments where there is a lot of room for improvement, you know, are they interested in talking about it? Or is it sort of like, they'll kind of give you the time of day, but there's no real interest in the findings?
Well, we've seen an increased interest in the findings as the report becomes more well-known and more talked about, and as some of these countries are reforming. So I think seeing that movement of reform in the Middle East region has raised a lot of awareness of other countries in the region. And often the first reaction is sort of disbelief, like, we don't have these type of laws, you got it wrong, can we check again? And what we found in discussing with governments is that they're often not even aware that they have really old laws in the books. Some of these laws are from the 60s or the 70s. They might have been inherited from colonial powers that have since reformed those countries in their reform those laws in their own countries. And just bringing that awareness when they find out that they do have these laws, we have seen a lot of interest in removing them.
So it's almost like one of those things, they have so much on their plate day to day that they might not have noticed that, hey, this is a pretty bad problem, and this is a tremendous opportunity for reform.
Exactly, yes.
So as we start to wrap up here, one question I want to make sure I don't forget to ask is, your team has expanded this data set to cover 50 years now, so looking at 50 years of gender equality as it pertains to economic inclusion. That's a huge data set. Can you talk to me a little bit about, like, what you've learned now that you have this giant data set and how the situation for women has evolved over the past 50 years?
We are very excited about this new data set. When we did the 2019 report, which looked at the last 10 years of data, we were struck by how slow the process of change has been. And we wanted to go back even further to see what can we learn about how reform happened in those countries that have achieved 100, what led to those reforms, and how can we make sure that the next 50 years are faster, and that we achieve these results in a faster way. So what we have seen is that, you know, today, I said that's one of the most shocking findings of our report, that today women have only 3/4 of the rights of men. And in 1970, if we looked at the world average, it was less than 50. So women had 1/2 of the rights that men have. And there was huge regional variation. So over these 50 years, different regions have made the progress at a different pace. So we have seen the OECD and high-income region make big progress. In 1970, actually, Eastern Europe was scoring higher than OECD.
Wow.
But now that's reversed. They're still doing quite well, but OECD has made a bigger progress. We've also seen Sub-Saharan Africa make huge strides. There are certain countries that have really shifted and prioritized these laws. And so that's been a very interesting experience, looking at how this change has happened in different regions and in specific countries.
Can you just give me, you know, as we finish up here, just give me the bottom line. So what is the state of women's economic inclusion in 2020, and what needs to happen next?
So women still have only 75% of the legal rights that men have, and the progress over time, the good news is that countries are reforming, they're reforming the right laws, but that change is not coming fast enough. So if we continue at the current pace, it would take another 50 years to get to equality, and we can't wait that long. So what we hope that countries see from this is where they stand, what they can do to improve, and are really motivated to make comprehensive reforms across the 8 indicators that we measure.
Tia Trumbich, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for sharing all of this new data and all your insights.
No, thank you very much. And if any of the listeners want to know where their country stands, they can go to our website, wbl.worldbank.org. We'll have the 50-year data set up there, and we have individual country pages that look at all the data and the legal basis that we use to create it.
Well, that's it for this International Women's Day edition of the Development Podcast.
If you want to learn more about the Women, Business, and the Law report, or see how your country ranks, go to wbl.worldbank.org.
Our guest today was Tia Trumbich in Washington, D.C.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked it, please leave us a rating on iTunes and consider sending us an email with your feedback using thedevelopmentpodcast@worldbank.org. Until next time, goodbye.
Bye.